from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location. Today, a special in-depth discussion on the subject of homeopathy. This precedes tomorrow's program, where we'll be doing an entire hour on an in-depth original investigative report, a white paper, on homeopathy and the new face of fascism in medicine. But today we're going to talk with homeopaths. We currently have two on the line, and on the line now, visiting from Germany, is Dr. Alex Tournier. He is a practicing homeopath and a scientific researcher. He studied physics at Imperial College of London and theoretical physics at the Cambridge University. He received his doctorate from the University of Heidelberg, studying the biophysics of water-protein interactions. In 2007, he founded and is now the director of the Homeopathic Research Institute in London, which is a charitable organization dedicated to facilitating and conducting high-quality scientific investigations into homeopathic principles and efficacy. For a decade, he worked at the prestigious Cancer Research UK Center, that would be equivalent to our National Cancer Institute, studying the interface between biology, physics, and mathematics. Alex's research institute's website is hri-research.org. Also joining him from Toronto in Canada is Ananda Moore, M-O-R-E. M-O-R-E. She is a classical homeopath, and she has completed a film that I just watched the other night. It's not in circulation yet. She is co-owner of Riverdale Homeopathic in Ontario, Canada, and she was originally very skeptical about homeopathy and regarded it as quackery. Later, after falling ill during a visit to India, she turned to homeopathic remedies and discovered she quickly recovered. Later, she attended a conference in Cuba and learned about successful efforts to thwart an epidemic of a tropical disease, which is very devastating, and it was done by administering homeopathic vaccines to 2.3 million Cubans. So observing how homeopathy is denigrated in the media and conventional medical community, and how homeopaths are publicly maligned, she directed the recent film called Magic Pills, Promise or Placebo, in order to correct the false perceptions of this 200-year-old practice. Ananda currently sits on the boards of the Ontario Homeopathic Association and the Ontario College of Homeopaths. Her film's website is magicpillsmovie.com, and she practices using the website riverdalehomeopath.com. Let's go now to say hello to our two panelists standing by, Alex and Ananda. Alex and Ananda, nice to have you with us today.
Nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation, Gary. Yep.
I'm going to start with a larger overview and then ask each of you to answer the question. We'll start with you, Alex, and then after that, Ananda. We have been working for more than a year on the subject of where do people get their information if they want to try a new type of therapy. Everyone knows that mainstream medicine provides people with a list of protocols for depression, anxiety, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, whatever it is. They will provide you with the input that you need if you choose a strictly orthodox approach, and the vast majority of people choose a strictly orthodox approach. Where I find orthodox medicine exceedingly well done, and I support it, is in emergency medicine. If you have a heart attack, a stroke, if you got your teeth knocked out, if you're in a car accident, if you've fallen, broken a leg, if you need special microsurgeries of the brain, we are exemplary with very positive results. Where we do not have those results are in chronic care, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, inflammatory conditions, mental health conditions, gastrointestinal conditions. There we fail miserably. In fact, I'm going to use a quote from the skeptics. Now, normally I would not use anything from the skeptics because I do not support their particular point of view. They have a right to that. These are the tiny group of people who have been brilliant enough to insinuate themselves within Wikipedia so that if you Googled homeopathy, you would come back with a devastatingly negative impression. In fact, I dare say most people would not want to even try homeopathy once they reviewed what Wikipedia has to say. But who is it at Wikipedia making this statement? They're all volunteers and anonymous editors. These people are not anonymous. They pride themselves in being against everything involving homeopathy. They think it's pure quackery. It's nothing but water. You're delusional to use it. And it's a danger, because the danger is if you use homeopathy for a condition, you're not using a proven therapy that could definitely help you. They are also against chiropractic, all Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, body-mind medicine, anything involving alternative medical therapy for pain or for any disease. If you were to use ozone or vitamin C drips, or if you were to use a plant-based diet, they're against all that. Again, which is their right. But then they go out of their way to attack and libel those that they disagree with, and whole professions. So you would think that they would be extremely well-versed in the fields to which they are attacking people. A, they're not homeopaths, they're not chiropractors, they're not nutritionists, they're not holistic doctors, they're not experts in herbal medicine or Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, yet they say it doesn't work. And they say it never works. And if you think it works, it's only a placebo effect. But here's what one of their statistics is. This is the first leading cause of death. Almost 800,000 people every year die based upon iatrogenesis or medically induced disease. That's their statistics. Mine would be a little higher, but so be it. We also know from a Johns Hopkins study that medical errors, just the errors in medicine, are the leading cause of death. But this is 250,000 a year, and that's nearly 10% of all the people who die in America each year die because of medical error. And from the Office of Disease Prevention, 1 in 3 hospitalizations are from adverse drug reactions. And 3.5 million physician office visits annually are due to adverse drug reactions. 3.5 million visits. And the University of North Carolina study on adverse drug reaction deaths, most commonly from anticoagulants and opiates and immunosuppressants. And for example, this year we will have about 633,000 deaths from heart disease. That's 23.4% of all deaths. Cancer, 596,000. Lower respiratory disease, 155,000 deaths. Stroke, 140,000 deaths. Alzheimer's, 110,000 deaths. And diabetes, almost 80,000 deaths. Now, what this tells me, at the very least, and this will be the basis of our entire discussion today, is that if you are failing that often, if you take that as an aggregate over 10 years, using their figures, we're not talking about my figures, we're talking about Orthodox medicine's own figures, nearly, with cancer, nearly 6 million people died using Orthodox therapies only. You're looking at over 7 million people dying of heart disease. You're looking at over 4 million people dying of stroke. And when you add it all up, over 20 million people have died using only Orthodox medicine. So that you have as a backdrop, and there's a known factor that a lot of it doesn't work. There's proof that it doesn't work from their own journals. So then in a country that prides itself on its freedoms, and we are quite simply one of the most free countries in the world, we're losing all of those freedoms. But the most important freedom to me is freedom of choice. So if I want to choose to have a coronary bypass or balloon angioplasty or stents or beta blockers for my heart disease, that's my right. And as an informed adult, I should be able to work with my doctor for the best therapy they can give me. But what if I want to choose another therapy? What if I want to go to Dr. Dean Ornish in California, where 9 people selected and proven to need a complete heart transplant, the whole heart taken out of their body and new one put in? He reversed all 9 of those people's conditions so they didn't have to have a heart transplant. And what about all the tens of thousands of people he's helped that needed angioplasties and stents and drugs, didn't need them? A plant-based diet did it. And he published this in peer-reviewed literature, the New England Journal of Medicine, the British Medical Journal, The Lancet. He did everything by the gold standard they require, and yet mainstream medicine shrugged its shoulders. The media was complicit in it was a non-event. Well, think of how many people would be alive today had they paid attention. But not only was his information dismissed, but then much of what he did was attacked. Now there's not just him. Because of him doing the original work, there are hundreds of doctors doing the same, plant-based diets. So if you say, as a skeptic or as one of the people within the medical community who doesn't believe in any other therapy, it's your right to say, I don't believe what you have, but it is not your right to say, I prevent you from having your choice or to make up your mind. I'm going to make up your mind for you, and I'm going to do it by the codicil of law. So I'm going to prevent you from seeking out a naturopath, a homeopath, a chiropractor. I'm going to denigrate the field. I'm going to damage the reputation of every single person. And at the lead of every single medical story in America, because we control the media completely, it's completely complicit, is our medical media. The medical media is a part of the medical establishment. We will say unequivocally there's no proof that it works. It's all quackery. There's no standards of high-quality science. That is where we are today. Tomorrow, I will deconstruct every single argument that orthodoxy has against homeopathy and show that indeed it is completely medically based. In fact, it is overwhelmingly medical based. In fact, there's more medical studies, scientific studies proving homeopathy works than what you will find for anything within orthodox medicine. That's my opening. Now I'm going to let both of you take your opportunity to talk about the field of homeopathy, why you believe it works, explain for the layperson what it is, and then have you personally received any personal attacks based upon your support of this healing form? It is your turn. Please take it on, Alex.
Yes, thank you for the introduction, Gary. So just to start, I'm actually not a practicing homeopath. I'm spending most of my time really doing research. And now we started actually a lab here in Germany, in Heidelberg, to investigate homeopathy from the fundamental point of view, from physics point of view. And the lab is called the Water Research Lab. And you can find it under wrl-lab.org. We're just starting the experiments, but we're really interested in getting to the bottom of the mechanism of action of homeopathy. The mechanism of action of homeopathy being one of the really weak points of homeopathy, as from a fundamental scientific point of view, we do not yet understand exactly how the homeopathic dilutions work. So that's kind of the field of investigation of the lab, which we are starting now. Now, when you say homeopathy and I come from the field of physics, and I came to homeopathy because of personal experience. And I stayed in the field of homeopathy because I found it very intriguing. And for me, there's a lot of evidence within the field that's very intriguing. And I want to mention a study by Robert Matty that is a review of homeopathy trials from 2014. And it's a review of individualized homeopathy trials. So that is the type of homeopathy that you would get from your normal homeopath. If you went and got a prescription, you would have individualized homeopathy. And that review is completely positive and passes every test you could put to it in terms of methodology. It follows the so-called Cochrane review standards. It has a so-called sensitivity analysis, so you can look at what happens if you only look at the high-quality trials or lesser-quality trials, what happens. And it's a completely, indisputably positive. So that is a review of the field that nobody really talks about and is much more recent than the other papers that the skeptics like to mention, in particular the Shang et al. Paper, which they always seem to mention. So Matty, the Robert Matty 2014 Vanitas Review is a big piece of the puzzle and something that for me I always go back to as a scientist and reminds me that there is really an effect here, an effect that is measured at 1.5 to 2 times greater than placebo. So it's not it's on par with quite a lot of standard conventional drugs according to that review, and none of the skeptics have yet been able to attack this review in any way. Each time we ask them, they're like, "Oh, I just don't have the time to analyze this review, but there must be something wrong because homeopathy doesn't work." But actually, nobody actually has ever been, at least so far, been able to rip it apart. So it really stands for me as a great piece of work, and it's actually very positive. Now, I want to touch down on another topic you mentioned, which is safety and the incredibly poor safety record of conventional medicine when it comes to compare with homeopathy. Homeopathy, there's been two safety studies. The more recent one from 2012, over the last 40 years, they were only able to find about 4 deaths in 40 years, even vaguely associated with homeopathy. These were cases of mismanagement of patients. Patients who should have gone to the hospital were not sent in due time. So 4 deaths over 30 years for homeopathy worldwide. I think that's a pretty amazing track record for homeopathy in terms of patient safety. And it's interesting indeed that all these skeptics, often we have to deal with them and they're not experts, and yet they have a very big podium and are able to get their way into the media, and they do control Wikipedia, as you mentioned. And yes, you know, we do get attacks, but actually, personally, I don't get many attacks. And there's a good reason, because actually any attack on our institution, on the Homeopathy Research Institute, would pretty much be publicity to us. So we haven't been actually attacked very much. But there are a lot of attacks out there, and there's a very, very strong anti-homeopathy climate. And as an example of this, like a few weeks ago, I met Professor Courvoisier, who's the president of ITSAC, which is the European Academic and Scientific Advisory Council. So it is kind of the body that oversees or gathers together the Royal Institutions of Medicine, of Science, the Académie des Sciences in France. So all across Europe, we'll gather the biggest national institutions of science. And after an hour of discussion, he could only say, all this has to be wrong because homeopathy is wrong. I just don't have the time to tell you exactly where it's wrong. I don't have the time to analyze all these evidence, but it has to be wrong because homeopathy is impossible. So this is the level of debate we get often. It's saddening that the mindset is so entrenched that the pros and against that they seem sometimes very difficult to have an open debate. So really, at the Homeopathy Research Institute, we're really trying to put the evidence forward that allows people to make their own mind, to see it firsthand. We have a lot of references and lots of arguments on our website to for people to make their own mind, also for scientists to look at it and make their own mind. So I think with that, I will finish my statement for now.
Okay. I have one last follow-up for you.
Yeah.
Based upon your research, I'm sure you've researched the scientific literature. We came up with over 2,000 studies. And why is it that with over 2,000 studies on homeopathy, many of them gold standard studies, many in peer-reviewed journals, many double-blind, placebo-controlled, even human studies, why is it that, in your opinion, the skeptics, and by extension the entire medical community, has been dismissive of the science behind homeopathy? Do you believe it's simply because they do not understand how it works?
It's a very good question, and it's an argument we get often. So when you think about it, 2,000 peer-reviewed papers sounds like a lot. But for scientists in the mainstream, that's actually very little. If you think about it, if you look at the reviews of homeopathy, you will find that if you look at the high-quality trials, for example, as analyzed by Shang et al. In the Lancet paper of 2005, they find about 21 papers that they would qualify as high quality. We don't agree about the conclusions of the Shang et al., but we can agree that it's about 20 high-quality clinical trials in 2005, probably about 30 or 40 now today. Now, 30, 40 high-quality trials is not very much, especially if you compare to conventional, which is churning of more than 3,000 a year of such trials. So, you know, your comparison is very much in homeopathy's disfavor. And one of the big things we need to do in homeopathy is do more research and actually increase the output of our clinical research to not, we cannot match what conventional medicine does, but at least create more research. I would say,
okay,
so one of the problems is quantity.
I would share a difference of opinion, Alex. As a scientist myself and a research fellow for over 33 years in supply biology, it was never how many studies you're doing. It was the quality and veracity of a study. For example, you're mentioning something I think is co-joining two separate issues. In American medicine, most of the science is proprietary. Therefore, you do not see the studies that do not work. Those studies are not published. If a chemical company, a drug company, makes 100 studies happen and only one shows some statistical significance, the other 99 are discarded. They never end up in any search engine. Whereas if homeopathy does a good study and it proves that it works, but there's no one else willing to pay millions of dollars to duplicate it, they have no interest in it. They're not making a drug from it. They're not getting a financial gain. Then they will say, well, that doesn't count because you don't have follow-up studies. That's a disingenuous argument. I believe that in my opinion, I believe that homeopathy is one of its own worst enemies. I really do. We do not need more studies, in my opinion. I believe you have all the evidence necessary, but there will never be enough proof. Never, never, never. You could do 40 million studies, and the people who are the cynics and skeptics would say it's still not good enough. You're playing their game now, Alex, and they'll win. That's my point of view. Please respond.
Yeah, I will respond. I agree with you in the sense that in a rational universe, the evidence that is out there is in favor of homeopathy. The latest evidence I mentioned from Robert Matty, which is, in my opinion, the best in favor of homeopathy, individualized homeopathy, is unarguably positive, and I stand by that. And that is what people should look at because that is positive and that is very well done, which is not the case from other reviews, which we can go to detail about the Lancet review and the Australian report because we've been very involved in the Australian report counterattack. So we can say quite a lot about that. Now coming back to the argument of numbers, one of the reasons why the skeptics, particularly Shang et al. And all the Australian report, have been able to attack is because they reduce the evidence what they call the very high quality trials. So by doing that, the Lancet paper, the Lancet review, reduced it to 8 trials. The Australian reduced the whole evidence to 5 trials. And the review by Robert Matty, if he concentrates only on the very high-quality trials, only finds 3 trials. The problem, and that's the problem, is that it's actually not that much evidence as a whole. Even if you look at 150 trials of homeopathy in total, yes, I agree with you. If you look at it as a whole, it's positive. Now, the job of a reviewer is to look at all the evidence and to sort out what's poor quality, what's good quality, what's medium quality. And It's too easy at this point for the skeptics to focus on a few not so good high quality trials and say, look, it doesn't work. What's amazing with the robot Mani trial, even if you go to the best trials, they are still positive. So the evidence is positive all the way through for individualized homeopathy. So in that sense, I'm completely, for me, that's the proof is there that homeopathy works, and a normal scientific mind should just go and read that review and should be convinced, because it's a very, very good review. So okay. And that, I think, is different in my mind from saying we need a lot more research. So on one hand, we have a very solid review, very well done, methodologically very sound, that says homeopathy works. And I think I can still say that we need more research, because we just don't have that much evidence compared to other fields.
Okay. You and I would share a difference of opinion. I just finished filming last week in San Francisco the one single physician who, more than anyone else in the history of American medicine, proved with one single study that you could reverse heart disease using a completely radically different non-invasive protocol, plant-based diet. That was Dr. Dean Ornish. For 40 years, his work has been laying fallow. Now, I can't tell you how many people says we need another study, but they'd have all the studies from the doctor's study and the nurse's studies. But he did the original study, and the doctors who are using his work today, those doctors and their patients are benefiting. Otherwise, you're playing in the game of the tobacco industry or the asbestos industry or the saccharin industry or the sicromate industry. We need more studies. We need more studies. When you have an absolute proof, when you have something that meets a gold standard of high quality, not just probability, but actual, can be based upon clinical experience, then I believe you stop doing more of the same and you then share that information. But it's all right to have a different opinion. That's part of good broadcasting. So I appreciate your input. We just have a different look at this. Because I know what happens, because I've been in hundreds of debates, and I know that the cynic comes not honoring the best that you are, but trying to find some weak point, and that becomes their total argument. And a year from now, 10 years from now, they'll still be hitting against homeopathy because they found 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 weak studies. They won't look at the 100 or the 200 or the 30 great studies. But here's where we change lanes and go into the fast lane. And for that, I'm asking, and stay by there, Alex. I'm going to ask Ananda. Nice to have you with us today, Ananda.
Thanks, Gary.
At the end of the day, virtually every single doctor in the world is practicing not scientific medicine, not evidence-based medicine. They're basing their entire judgment not upon a study, but based upon what the patient gives them in feedback. Every doctor in the world, you go into their office, they say, how are you doing? How's the drug's working or not? And the patient then gives them feedback. I'm feeling better. I'm feeling worse. I got more pain. I'm dizzy. And based upon that, empirical evidence, let me highlight, empirical evidence, the doctor will make the best informed decision to go forward helping that patient. The homeopathic physician is no different. In fact, the homeopathic physician will spend more time with a patient than you're ever going to find a regular doctor spending. The average time for the average physician today upon a repeat visit is 7 minutes or less. That doesn't work with a homeopath. There's so many different possibilities that they must consider that could be causing the patients to respond. So set aside the clinical studies for a moment. We have the clinical studies proving that it works. If a person chooses not to accept it, you're not going to change their mind. They have a political and ideological agenda. But now you're dealing with people. And that's the strength of the argument of homeopathy, because you've got some evidence that I had not seen before. So I commend you for having the temerity to go out there and get it in Cuba, in India, and in Africa with different conditions, cancer in India, AIDS and HIV infection in Africa, and a particular type of virus in Cuba, where not just thousands, not even hundreds of thousands, but millions of people were impacted by homeopathic remedies. And to this day, there'll be no one who accepts that within the Orthodox medical community, no matter what results you got. And yet the results were there. I want you to take your time and take us through this story of what really is important, how the homeopath and homeopathic remedies work for individual patients, and using these three as examples. The form is yours.
They're not small questions, are they, Gary? Thank you. I just wanted to clarify from your introduction that, so no one gets upset, that I'm no longer sitting on the boards of the college and the association because of other work taking over. But, so I've recently completed a film and looked at projects happening and really tried to look at large-scale projects happening around the world along with the science. And I just want to refer quickly to the study that Alex has referred to several times, which is the Robert Mathey the study that he's referred to, which was a meta-analysis. And what's unique about that compared to a lot of the research and what makes it special is that it's looking at individualized homeopathy. A lot of these supposedly high-quality studies we have out there are not looking at homeopathy as it's actually practiced, but rather looking at a generalized practice of homeopathy, which doesn't seem to work as well according to the scientific literature. So that's one of the things I want to point to because I don't know if it was stressed enough. And that brings us to this idea of how are the patients doing? And we have over 200 years of clinical evidence that shows that patients get better and they improve. And I don't think that those millions of cases that we have are worthless data. They mean something. And they're no longer anecdotal when there's such a large amount of them and our material builds on a daily level. But I was very disappointed in how the media was portraying all our evidence and what was going on in homeopathy and all this ridicule and discredit, real efforts to discredit individuals. And I heard about what had happened in Cuba. It was actually a conference in Canada here where this gentleman, Dr. Gustavo Bracho, came and presented how the pharmaceutical company, the Finley Institute, used homeopathy to stop or to address an epidemic of a disease called leptospirosis. Now, this disease is, most of us here in North America aren't too familiar with it, but it's a spirochete. It's a bacteria that causes a lot of problems in tropical countries, and because it's spread through water, it causes it has a huge impact when there's hurricanes. So Cuba, now the Finley Institute is actually the only pharmaceutical company in the world that makes the human leptospirosis vaccine. And in 2007, they were faced with the beginning of an epidemic. What happened was a couple of hurricanes hit the east coast of Cuba. And, you know, homes are destroyed, everything's flooded, there's no clean water, there's no way to educate people to stay out of the water and stay safe. And already at that beginning of the year before that happened, the rates of this disease were quite elevated. So faced with this emergency situation and not having enough vaccine for the population, they had, I can't remember the exact number, but enough for about 0.1% of the population. And there's other issues with getting a vaccine to people in an emergency situation. So this one requires two doses, takes several months to take effect. By then, it's too late. Requires cold chain transportation, very difficult when there's no electricity and you're trying to manage your way through devastated areas. And so having had done some research on homeopathy, they decided to see if they could use a homeopathic nosode to address the situation. And very, very quickly, because the way the health system in Cuba works is that every medical doctor is responsible for their neighborhood, and they're responsible for the health of very specific people, and they know who they're responsible for. So it's this beautiful network and an intimate network, which makes it easy to get data, and it makes it really easy to get things out So within 2 weeks, they had gotten 2.3 million, not quite. Within 2 weeks, they had 70% of the population covered, of this 2.3 million people in this area, in these three provinces. And over time, they got to 2.3 million people with very simple homeopathic remedies. They were able to trace who had how many doses and all of that. And what they found was quite remarkable. So the incidence of the disease went down quite dramatically. And what was interesting was that the following year, several hurricanes hit all of Cuba. It was one of the hardest hit years for Cuba on record. And the area where they received the homeopathic intervention, the rates of the disease there declined by 80%, where the rest of Cuba that could be seen as a control, the cases of the disease were increased by 27%. So I, realizing what was going on and feeling that this was a story that was never going to get out there, I felt that, you know, there had to be a way to get this information to the general public. And so I decided to make this movie. But you were mentioning that there was, you know, treatment of AIDS in Africa, treatment of cancer in India. And these are topics that we're always scared to talk about in the U.S. or in North America and Europe, because supposedly we are drawing attention to how homeopathy is being used. And we don't want to do that because we want to keep ourselves safe. We want to talk about diarrhea. We want to talk about colds and flus. But for me, the real impact is that this can be life-saving medicine if used correctly and under proper supervision and in the right conditions. In Africa, Homeopathy for Health in Africa has been working with hospitals, with allopathic doctors, in treating people with HIV and AIDS. And they're not taking them off their medications, and in fact, they're helping the medications work better and last longer. So I think we need to, and being there, it was incredible. I had heard Jeremy Scher, the head of Homeopathy for Health in Africa, talk frequently about the results. And even then, I, having not seen it in person, it was hard to believe. But having followed him from, and Camilla Scher, his wife, from clinic to clinic, it was incredible to see how the majority of people were feeling better, were able to work again. And what's a huge issue in Africa is the notion of AIDS widows, where the husband dies. They realize the community blames the wife for having given him HIV. They then ostracize her for having AIDS. And so she ends up by herself, responsible for her children, and eventually can get quite ill and unable to take care of her family. So this is a large majority of the type of people that Homeopathy for Health in Africa is seeing. And you can see the difference. You can see that these women are now back to work, are able to take care of their families, are able to engage in society again, and they're getting their lives back, which I think is quite phenomenal. And it was person after person after person, and I saw hundreds of cases like this in my time there.
That for those who are scientists or physicians or nurses in this audience, one of the markers of the progression of a person with HIV and AIDS infection is the CD4 counts.
Yeah.
And in the film, you repeatedly show the doctor having a medical card. So each time they visit the clinic, they show their CD4 counts. And after homeopathy, not before, there was enormous increase, sometimes 1 to 2 to 300% increase in their CD4 counts, but only after homeopathy was added to the protocol.
Well, most of the cases I show in the film have reached what's called treatment failure. So here in, you know, in more developed countries, we have different drug cocktails. And so when a person, when an individual goes on antiretrovirals, eventually over time, that antiretroviral cocktail they're on stops to be effective, and they're moved on to a new set of drugs. In Africa, they don't have so much access to medication, and often there's only one line of drugs, where here we might have, you know, maybe eight or more. So what happens is that these people still on their antiretroviral medications go into treatment failure where their drugs are no longer effective and they're no longer working and the CD4 counts go down. And because they're being monitored by the medical system as well, we can see how they're doing after they receive the homeopathic treatment. And quite often what's great is that you do see a change in CD4. So you're not only looking at the external symptoms or the presenting symptomatology, but you can look at the blood work. Now, I've been asked why we're not looking at viral load, and the problem is that in Tanzania, they don't really have the technology to be able to look at viral load. It's a lot more expensive, so they're dependent on CD4. And I can tell you that Homeopathy for Health in Africa is fundraising right now to get that kind of machinery so they can test for viral load.
But still, it showed it. I remember one of the patients went from low hundreds up to 1,600. That's normal. And so, and it wasn't in just one patient, that kind of increase. So I want the health community and especially the AIDS community and especially Charles Ortlieb and the people who are more progressive within that to understand the role that homeopathy could be playing with people with full-blown AIDS or HIV infection. Now let's go to India, because to me the most compelling message that I was not aware of, so again, thank you for bringing it to our attention, was the comprehensive cancer clinic. First, we have no clinic in America that treats as many people, not MD Anderson, not Sloan Kettering, not Roswell Park, as does that clinic in India. The numbers were just mind-boggling, and yet they were doing very methodical work, and it was homeopathic remedies, and there was a research facility associated with it, so they were able to collect good data while they were doing it to support that the safety and efficacy of the protocol, especially with glioblastomas, the brain cancer. Take us there, please.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't necessarily call them a research facility. What they are doing is keeping very good track of all their patients, and have they have a whole room with computers and servers to keep track of the database as it's growing. So they're keeping very good track, and they are in that way they're doing research. But they're not doing doing the type of research that Alex, for example, would be doing. And they have been treating, they're a family, third generation now, homeopaths. And having seen so many people over such extended periods of time, they've developed protocols that are very based on pathology. So they have the capacity to see people very quickly. They have access to proper testing to see how their patients are doing medical tests. And it's quite extraordinary. I showed up there and there were, we showed up in the evening and people start lining up in the evening for the next day. And they come from all over India and Bangladesh and Nepal, like the subcontinent. People come from everywhere to get to see these doctors, and they line up and they spend the whole night in line. This whole kind of infrastructure has appeared around them. People come and sell food and they'll wash your clothes, and it's quite amazing. And where the one area where the Banerjees have had I think more extraordinary results than most other areas is around brain tumors. They've created a protocol, a very simple protocol, using two homeopathic remedies, and they're treating people with that. And I personally got to spend some time with one particular patient who was himself in the medical industry for his work. And he suffered greatly, not just from glioblastoma, but from the treatment of that. He was on a lot of chemo, which basically he ended up in bed, unable to speak, basically paralyzed, and left to die. And it was when he reached out to the Banerjees that everything started to change. His brain tumor shrunk quite significantly. It's still there. It's much smaller. He now can speak. He can walk. He's become a very strong advocate for homeopathy and for helping others. He's been traveling the world, and he completely went off all of his allopathic treatment in order to get to where he is now. But this is, they've got thousands of cases, and they've got really good databases keeping track of how these people are doing. What was I going to say? And it went beyond that. They participated in a study at the MD Anderson Center with a doctor named Sen Fatak. And he did, you know, in vitro studies looking at the effects of these two remedies on cancer cell lines in a petri dish, and was able to conclude that the two remedies would kill the cancer cells while allowing healthy cells to grow and proliferate. So I think we've got evidence there from a clinical perspective, but also from a basic science perspective, which is interesting. And it'd be, as you said, we don't have a lot of replication, but that's the kind of study that I think would be great to replicate.
What was remarkable is to see that they brought in nearly 1,000 patients, new patients per day. There's no place in America that has 1,000 new patients a day. And they've been doing this for a long time. And as you mentioned, they have one room set aside with data analysis. And so the percentage of regression, remission, and improvement in their glioblastomas over the period of time they were measuring was 19%. Well, give you an idea, in the United States, having studied the statistics, written about it extensively, with five-year figures, survival for glioblastomas, almost zero in the United States, is way down. Mm-hmm. In some cases, you might get 1% or 2%. So this should have been a big flag going up for the rest of the oncology community, saying, let's take a look at this, let's try it, let's see if we can duplicate the results, which is part of good science. And yet it's not being done, and that's unfortunate, with the exception of that one situation at MD Anderson.
Now, there's stories from them of having been asked to do research, getting grants, going for, and when they go to move forward with these collaborations with hospitals in the States, suddenly the hospital turns on them and says, I don't know what you're talking about. We weren't going to do any research. Grant money? What grant money? So this is, you know, this is what they've felt quite attacked on that level, where they're really excited to collaborate and work with researchers and doctors, and at the last minute, that research falls through for no reason that they can understand.
Ananda, you also showed I don't know in what context it was, I believe it was in a research institute, where I believe he was a homeopathic physician, but he was educating his students. And he said that they were able to publish in a peer-reviewed journal a very important landmark study. But after that, every single study that they submitted was rejected without comment, not even the courtesy of what's wrong with your study. And they can't get published since then. And that is not unheard of. That is the politics within the scientific community, that once you show efficacy and safety, they want to make sure that you don't get published or funded, or the media does not get a hold of your story. Mm. Could you tell us about that particular institute?
Well, who you're talking about is Dr. Jayesh Balare, who's a chemical engineer trained in India and the States. And he is one of the few people in the world who has 24/7 access to an electron microscope. And his area of expertise is nanomedicine. So he's been working in that field. And he, inspired by some friends, he decided to look at one of his students decided to look at homeopathic remedies at high dilutions, where supposedly, according to mainstream chemistry and Avogadro's number, there should be no substance nor original material left in those dilutions. And what they discovered was a presence of nanoparticles of source material. And this work has been reproduced several times in different labs around the world now, and they've gone to different remedies and different dilutions as well. But at that time, they managed to get their work published. It's relatively basic research. It's not clinical. It's just looking at a substance and seeing what's in it. And as he said, that first time they did that, they were able to publish. After that, they were not. And because he works with all these PhD students at the Institute of Technology in Bombay, he, you know, it's very important for his students to be able to publish their work. But doing any work in homeopathy, they get an instant rejection letter. He feels that the work is not getting past the editor's desk to the peer review process. And it's making it hard for them to continue that research because then their students can't get the work they need to get done in order to graduate.
My final question for both of you, and we'll start with you, Amanda, and then we'll finish up with Alex, is that in the United States, there is a small but very diligent and highly qualified homeopathic community. But if you were just to read the American media and skeptics' reports, you would think that this ban, this negative impression, was worldwide. Tell us about those countries such as Switzerland and Germany and other countries that respect not only homeopathy in France, but the citizenry has supported it and the medical community has brought it in to be a part of the adjunct therapy of regular traditional medicine in those countries.
Can I answer that? I think it's a double-edged sword what you're because things have been changing quite rapidly in a lot of those countries over the last couple of years. Yes, Switzerland has embraced homeopathy, but now, and so had Germany and France in the past, but what we're finding in the last couple of years is that the attack from the media has grown very, very strong there. And for the first time, like they're surprised by that. The practitioners that I am in touch with there, and Alex can probably say a lot more about this. But for us here in North America, we're used to that that attack and that level of discreditation. But what's happening there now is that the media is really turning against this longstanding tradition of homeopathy, and people are starting to question it in a more significant way there from a patient and a grassroots perspective, general public perspective. But what's amazing is, yes, and Switzerland is a lot more open. I was out interviewing people on the street, just asking them what they thought of homeopathy. Did they know what it was? What was their experience? And in Switzerland, almost everyone I spoke with had experience with homeopathy, had very positive experience with homeopathy, knew what it was, and loved it. Where across the border in Austria, most of the people I spoke with on the street said they knew what homeopathy was, it was absolute quackery, and they didn't believe in it. So it was so interesting to see these two, like one right next to each other, two countries have such different culture around the same thing and such different opinions, which were, I think, mostly fed by a narrative that's been created by the medical and media communities.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alex, your thoughts, please. Closing thoughts.
I just want to also echo a bit what Amanda was saying in terms of the difficulty to do research. I left behind a career in research, and my colleagues basically told me, "Oh, this is career suicide." And it's very difficult to engage in research with that kind of atmosphere around you where it's extremely difficult to get funding. And as Amanda said, it's also very difficult to get published. There are many stories from my colleagues of papers being rejected for no apparent reason apart from the word homeopathy appearing somewhere in the paper. And otherwise, it's a very sad state of affairs today that just putting the word homeopathy anywhere in your paper, if it's not negative, will actually really drastically diminish your chances of getting published. And so a career in this field is very complicated. And also, so it's very hard to get new researchers interested. So, and that's all due to the level of attacks. As Ananda says, the attacks are on the rise here in Europe. The NHS now has closed down on homeopathy. That is being fought on the legal front, but it's very fierce battle. We're really down in the trenches, so to speak, because also these attacks are now coming to Germany, where it's becoming legal, where doctors are deciding in the next few days whether the specialty of homeopathy is going to remain for the doctors in Germany. And we know there are plans afoot to ban the homeopathic remedies from the pharmacies. So these are very deep attacks that are taking place in Europe, and it's very, very systematic, trying to take it away from national health systems, trying to take it away from the pharmacies, taking it away from the patients. And we're fighting every inch of the way with the evidence to back it up to on these legal fronts, on these media fronts. Now, as Ananda says, there's a very strong media machinery behind all this here. We see it. The skeptics are very strong and very have very big entries into the mainstream media, where they can propagate the message that there is no evidence for homeopathy, that don't do any more research because we know already that homeopathy doesn't work. You don't need to do it again. Don't waste money on research because we have the answers and it's homeopathy doesn't work. So so that's the type of message we're fighting against, and I'm fighting against personally. In terms of getting funding, because it's extremely hard to get research funding when the reviewers of your grant will just assume that because it's homeopathy, then there's nothing to see. And so it's kind of an end game. You cannot go anywhere. Well, so that's the situation here.
Alex, for you and Ananda, you're both going through challenging times, as all homeopaths are. Here in the United States, the FDA is reviewing homeopathy to limit it, and ultimately, I believe, to destroy it, but first to eliminate it. And some of the statements made by Dr. McCullough were actually inaccurate about it banning homeopathy. That's not what's going to happen. But tomorrow I'm going to do a one-hour special, original investigative report, because I do not believe that just doing more studies and promoting the benefits of homeopathy will win the day. I believe you must stop that vicious attacks by showing that the people who are doing the attacking are unscientific, unqualified, and what's their real agendas, and that will be done tomorrow. Thank you both very much for being on. Alex Tournay, and also from Canada, and he's from Germany, and Ananda Moore. Thank you both. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Tomorrow, powerful program. You won't want to miss it. Have a nice day.